soigner.
And then the Shirin will disappear to wherever she goes to, incorporated into the document proper. What? they run this relationship. Just explain. Just explain the process here. It sounds the same thing as do it yourself.
I mean, look, we're going to be looking at the A list with the amendments to the bill that's been proposed. And if there's an agreement in principle to the amendment, it's going to be incorporated into the bill as is, and then we'll produce the B bill. And then next week, we can look at passing the B bill. The reason for that is that in the past we've only passed the bill with amendments and then not look at the bill after it's been incorporated. And lots of problems have been picked up in some of the bills when the process comes back from fringes. So it was odd that we, the principal agreed to this one, and then when it's incorporated we pass the bill like that with amendments.
Essentially, it means that the portfolio committee must be in charge of the editorial editing of the bill, finally. So that what then goes out is the version that we have seen ourselves. That's the story as I understand it. So we're going to do that now. Deputy Minister, welcome. I promised the meeting that when you come back, there was a question raised about the minister and his position on the basis of what was reported in the news. The DJ explained, but I thought you would want to say a word.
Thank you, Chairperson. I should remind this meeting in the first instance that you might want to forget this, but you were editor of a community newspaper in the late 80s in Etegwini, Durban. So I think you're particularly suited to oversee the finalization of the bill with this new process. And by the way, as an ex-chair, I welcome. I want to tell you something. The press is here, I won't. But about a certain bill that we processed and what we got back from the powers that be in the bureaucracy. But yes, the thing is that we need to remind ourselves that ministers are also human. They get sick. And our minister is unfortunately ill at the moment, and he's on leave. And as happens in most of all democracies, the president or prime minister appoints an acting minister. As you know, our current acting minister, until the minister is back in circulation, is Minister Nathi Mthethwa. He and I are working very closely together. In fact, 15 minutes before I came to this meeting, I phoned him, and everything is on course. The preparations for the elections, the gazetting indeed of the date of the elections will occur on Thursday. So presumably this committee conveys its good wishes to the minister for a speedy recovery. Together with several people here, the DG, his political advisor, his chief of staff, myself, we're in regular contact with him, but we are not intruding unduly on his space. He is very aware of what's happening, and I take it that we convey good wishes for early recovery. This is not new, and people know that shortly after the elections of the first ever democratic government in this country, the Minister of Education at that time had a heart attack, and he was substituted for 6 months or more by an acting minister. There's nothing to hide. It was a public domain. There's Minister Bengu, there's Minister Joe Modise, Minister Joe Ntlantla, Minister Mantu Shabalala Mtsima. The normal process applied. As far as the work of the department goes, we are fully on course, and we confer regularly with the minister.
Thank you very much. Indeed, we were waiting for you to just it, and yes, we will convey our well wishes to the minister, to you and the minister, the acting minister. We hope he recovers well. Members, the next process, as explained by our boss here, will be as such. So we are going to go through the process. You don't have to be mysterious about what happens in the process of a bill being processed. Documents do get changes. We don't know what are the real reasons, but we have to be at least the committee has been given responsibility over that process here. It's a collective job. We will go through the process, and where the department feels it wants to explain anything or members want to clear something, please feel free to do so. We will take it page by page, and then you will have an opportunity later to express the view of the... This is still a preliminary process, but it might be useful for you to indicate more or less that it's okay, blah, blah. So let's go to the first page then, clause 2. Page 1, clause 2. You can deal with the title if you want to. I mean, nothing is cast in stone. Page 2, clause 3.
G4A and B. Just a concern here that there might be a gap that things can fall through, and this applies a couple of times, is I'd like to see a time provision there. For example, at the end of both clause A and B, to say within 7 days.
Or the time frame within which those up there should respond. Okay, that's your proposal. With you, let's agree with the time frame. Let's come back and concretize it. Members can express their view. There's a feeling that we should express. Okay, that's that one. Let's go on. Any other on that page? Okay. Yes, that.
For me, in reading this, it says, as may be prescribed. That prescription, doesn't it refer to the time? Because if you read further, the talk, it talks of a period that does not exceed 3 months. So isn't the time that has already been specified?
Yeah. Okay. This English language, legalese, all right. All right, let's look at it that way. We will come back to it, but for now, that's a possible interpretation. Okay, we will come back to it, proceed. Okay, page... 3.
I've mentioned this before, Mr. Chair, but 57A3, I'd like to see the final 6 words taken out. So it may not be real.
Oh, yeah, it still is. Yeah, okay.
You know my story.
You know your story. Absolutely. Okay. I read that somewhere else, yeah. Honorable Karim?
Yeah.
I just wanted to, I raised this with the lawyers in our department, and it's something we were preoccupied with in the past. The use of language in law doesn't necessarily correspond to the use of language.
Ordinarily.
Yeah. So the may not, if you ask the lawyers, why may not, must not be reemployed? But they say, no, the may, the effect of the may in law in this case is a must. Because if you say they may not be reemployed, it implies they could be reemployed. Whereas I think what the committee means to say is they must not be employed. My own view would be that I don't see why it shouldn't be must, but the lawyers are insisting the may in this context does mean must. And presumably the committee decided that no matter how serious your misconduct is, you can be employed beyond 5 years, right? And presumably there, it doesn't necessarily follow that you will be employed. So presumably the minister can send a regulation out to say that only in exceptional circumstances should you employ somebody who's transgressed in a very serious way as reflected in financial misconduct. I wonder if I'm being clear at all. I don't think I am, but I know what I'm trying to say.
Don't worry, we've heard you.
So in other words, if I may, Chairperson, to answer you personally, we discussed it collectively. There's a cocktail view and there's my own view. And it's not a crime in a democracy. For what it's worth, I'm a deputy minister, to say that actually I agree with you. But as a department, we agree with the committee that there are exceptional circumstances where somebody could absolutely repent, if there's such a word. I'm an atheist, right? So for me to use that word is quite... and there may be an exceptional circumstance, Comrade Chair,
yeah,
where somebody has got like 7 children that they're catering for and so on, and they genuinely have made a mistake in the past, and we have to be generous. So I think, I don't think there's a big difference between the value you're expressing and what the committee is saying. And the way we can deal with your problem, which is what I think the Jackie must think about, is in the regulation. We must say that it's an exceptional circumstance. Mr. Chairman, briefly.
No. Yes, okay. You notice that I didn't say we should do the same with the others. But I'll allow you for this one, both of you, to do that. And then we can proceed. I was going to say, let's come back to those, having looked at them, and then we can go into their discussion. But you can do your comment now while it's still fresh in your head.
Minister, I'm pleased we agree on this one, but I'd like to see it in the legislation rather than just in the regulations. That way we get it nailed down up front. And I, unlike you, though, I do not believe that once somebody has stolen public money, they should be given a second chance to steal again. And I think that's that would send a very strong message to people that there is no forgiveness for this sort of thing. Because it doesn't just, it's not just some arbitrary amount of money that's being stolen. It directly impacts on the lives of poor people when money is stolen. That's the point I'd like to make.
Okay, let's come back to that. Yes, number four.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, to go back to page 4, numbers 7 and 8, issue with time period there. Again, we're creating with 3 months rather a large gap that can that people can fall through. I'd like to see that reduced.
6 and 7?
7 and 8.
7 and 8. Page this...
I discussed this with Vuyo and Fani as well. And I just want to alert the committee to this, because this will arise.
Which
in the future. We're talking of 10 on page 5. Bargaining Council Agreement.
Yes.
One of the reasons, maybe the DG and Shlakani want to add, that we came to this conclusion very grudgingly and reluctantly, is that SELGA makes decisions often that have consequences for the macroeconomic stability of the country and the national fiscus and so on, where under the pressure of the workers' movement, the unions, they have to make concessions, and then the consequences are felt by the national sphere. Now, the effect of this is to say that organized local government, that SELGA must consult with the minister before they begin the negotiations. Presumably the effect of this is once the negotiations have begun, ideally one would want to put in there, we had our own way, but we the executive and your parliament, ultimately it's your decision. We would have said before the negotiations begin, and then afterwards municipalities, and before finalizing the negotiations. Because you see, at the end of the day, the real effect is felt on the final decisions that SELGA and SAMU and IMATU secure. So in other words, they can meet the minister. The minister might provide a framework within which say, look, you can increase the salaries between a band of 3 and 8%. But when they go and negotiate, they're under pressure, the strike is continuing, they negotiate for 12%. There's no way the minister can have a say, because before finalizing it, they don't come back to the minister. Now, I'm told that if we were to put in those words, it would undermine the collective bargaining process and labor regulation. So all I'm saying in short is that if the executive had its own way, it would also put in the words, and before the final decisions are made. I'm just alerting the committee to this, that what we have there is not necessarily going to, in all cases, secure the outcome that we sought to achieve.
Okay, you note that on page 5. Let's go to page 6. Come back. Nothing on page 6. And on page 7, there is a profound conversation on page 7. Okay, this let's start from at the back, in other words, with the bargaining council story. What is the public service role of the minister in the negotiation? Is it in the legislation? Is there any comparable story there?
No, thank you, Chair. The role of the minister, he gives direction. In fact, she is the one. Oh, okay, now because it's he. I used to be negotiator during the time when we had a woman there. But what I can tell you, Chair, is that the minister, they're responsible. He is the one who will then give direction to the negotiating team, even dealing with the mandate, because there's a mandating committee within cabinet that deals with mandate giving. The two ministers, the Minister of Public Service as well as National Treasury, they will then engage on a number of issues. In fact, in the negotiating team, we'll have somebody from National Treasury who sits, make sure that you guide the direction. And when, before a final decision is taken, you'll find at some point, you'll find that the minister responsible sits with the negotiating team, and you find that the unions are there. I can tell you, in the strike of 2004, where we were there, the minister then was part of the deliberations and make sure that there is a linkage between the mandating committee as well as the negotiators, and we are able to resolve issues quickly. So the minister only is on the loop and he knows what's happening. Unlike the side that you wouldn't even know, the next thing you see a strike and then you are called to account and you don't know what to do, or you are only asked to grace the ceremony. But later, cabinet asks questions and the minister says, no, but I was never part of the process, I don't know. So these are some of the issues that were
raised. That I understand. What I was asking was whether that role is in the legislation. That role which the minister plays, whether it is in the legislation. No,
Chair, except that the Public Service Act, I think, gives power to him in terms of developing the national norms and standards when it comes to benefits.
Yeah.
But what we did is that we signed certain agreements and there's an arrangement, established rules as to how you deal with that particular process.
Okay. Yeah, the reason I'm inquiring about that is that we are creating a precedent of including in the legislation the role of the minister, which does not agree to somewhere, and what are the implications for that, and what form must it take if it comes into legislation? That's what I'm asking. But the rationale you're giving for why the minister is interested, your grahala, I don't know what you say in English. we appreciate that point, but just that we needed to, yeah. Okay, any other comment? Yes, Ndata.
No, maybe, Chair, just to qualify our argument that we have had our own experience with the DDM Chair, where there have been quite a number of negotiations within the sector itself, where the minister has been called to come and intervene, but it's just when they're just invited. Even this morning, I know I got a call from one of the trade unions. The issue is that we must be very clear so that we're not even divided as an employer to say, let us know formally how we deal with our own issues. Not only called when there's a crisis, you come in, and when people don't like you, you must just leave. Because it has been the arrangement that has been there, and we're trying to formalize and make sure that we work together with some of the things.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think the difference between the national, provincial, and the local sphere is that in the local sphere, it is the municipalities that are the employers, and that's what the Constitution says. I think one must be careful also not to create a potential unintended consequence where it is not clear as to who actually should be sitting at the negotiating table. The amendment as it is more of an intergovernmental nature, which I think is appropriate in the circumstances. But I think to take it beyond that, maybe problematic.
Okay. Who is the employer? The minister.
You see, if you look, even if we were, if the committee was going to accede to our request, right, and say after the word municipalities in 71.1, and before final negotiation, or before final decision, consult the minister, it doesn't say that the minister has to approve. Mm-hmm. It simply says consult. It doesn't say in consultation. And therefore, you know, in law, all that will happen is if SELGA has no choice but to concede to say 13%, to use my early example, and then the national minister says 8%. There's nothing the minister can do, even if we put those words in, because all they require is consulted, and he can put his full argument that, look, the effect will be smaller rural municipalities will suffer, the equitable share will be affected, blah, blah, blah. It's setting a precedent that the spill-off effect will be that employees in the national and provincial sphere will now say they also want 13%, and so on and so on. At the end of the day, I can say, we've consulted you, but we're still going ahead with 13%, because we are the employer, and it comes substantially from our own revenues. So I don't think the effect would be to stifle and stymie SELGA, but it would actually mean that the minister is given the full opportunity to spell out the consequences for the national sphere of a SELGA decision. And to me, I'm not a lawyer, I don't think that Fani and Vuyo, well, I with due respect to them, are necessarily correct. It would only if one can negotiate with the minister before the negotiations begin, or consult with the minister, why is it illegal or ultra vires to consult with the minister the day before or the moment before you're finalizing your or signing off? So that's what I don't understand, but maybe they want to speak for themselves.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, I agree with the Deputy Minister, but I just wanted us to remind ourselves where we started with this subsection. Whereas the objective of the department was to set a framework there within which bargaining could take place. If you can remember, we had it separately in the bill, which didn't really pose a big problem for the constitutionality of the bill, but we then moved it to the bargaining council section just to make it clearer that what we actually just wanted is that the minister is up to date with what is happening. So we must always remember, if we are going to put something more in here, it might go as far as infringing on someone's right to bargain, because bargaining happens within the Labour Relations Act, within that framework. So the minister cannot really be changed to in consultation with, because then it will be infringing. And where I agree with the Deputy Minister is that even if we put after or before the decision making, it won't really change much. As the Deputy Minister was saying, the minister can, you know, whatever the minister says, the bargaining will still happen. But we would have reached our objective in the sense that the minister would at least have been consulted before it started. If we go further than that, we might reach the point where it becomes unconstitutional.
I understand that. In other words, the as it stands, it's a reflection of that framework story. SALGA and the unions wanted to know specifically what will you be wanting to do in a matter that is of bargaining, the forte of bargaining. This is what they wanted explicitly from you to get. So this language is intended to provide that clarity. So, and what they are saying, that if you proceed beyond this, you are sliding into a territory that is not right. And the lawyer is saying yes to that. Why is yes that?
And unfortunately, I'm not going to add make any more legal sense here, but I just wanted to say, from a policy perspective, I mean, I 300% agree with my Deputy Minister.
Yes.
We are not talking about in consultation.
No,
I'm just saying for the record. We are
not
talking about in consultation.
Yes.
I was even trying to see if we can even use a different language to the word consult. Even if we talk about organized local government must inform, I'm saying even if we need to soften it a little bit, but I think the principle of informing the executive before a decision has been taken, I think it is an important one. And I really fail to understand where we are becoming sliding into something, or whether it becomes unconstitutional or not.
No, there is fear. You must acknowledge there's fear in SALGA and SAMU that you are to take over their responsibility. That's how you have come across. That's their understanding. And they are saying, no, they don't like that.
No.
It's from one extreme, not involved altogether, to wanting to get involved in determining what they should say yes or no. By implication, if you say even before, that's not your intention, right? You say you must inform us before, and before you finalize. What does a reasonable man assume you want to do? What does a reasonable person assume you want to do in that environment? Okay. Negatively, you want to tie our feet. We can't move beyond certain things. Otherwise, you use your authority to block us. Okay? Or, no, as the Deputy Minister says, we want to communicate the implications of the decision that you might go, which goes beyond our ability to cope with, which means don't go that route. So you are determining what the bargaining negotiations must be by implication. Even if you don't call it that, the effect amounts to the same thing. Okay, this is my interpretation, right? So, I'm saying that the language we use to express what you want to achieve must satisfy what you say you are not going to do, the constitutionality of this relationship. People are saying, okay, this is our role, our responsibility. Why are you encroaching on it by implication? So, we must find the language to express that in the legislation so that it satisfies that. We must acknowledge the fears that people have. Okay, I'll come back to you, Lux, and you, Jackie. Let's hear James.
I'm not frightened by the word inform. I think logically, if we're going to involve the minister in this at any stage, she might as well be informed throughout. I don't think people should be scared of that. And I think it's wrong to think that anybody could take a decision without being fully informed about what's going on. So, in this case, the minister's input might be useful.
Yeah. Your location informs your outlook. Okay, Glenn. It means the shoe is not your size, so you don't feel the pinch. So we must acknowledge other concerns and fears.
I'm preparing for power one day in the future.
It's a long project.
Seriously, long term project.
In the next century or in the year after, shall I say. Yes,
No, thanks. Chair, I just want to say that I don't think that parties should be having challenges with this. You see, we have got experience in the field and we know exactly what's happening. And what you don't want to see happening is when it suits them, they run to the minister. And I'm talking about Labour and SALGA both, because it's something that is happening every day. But even when you come here to the committee, we are expected to clearly understand what is happening and be able to account, and the minister must do so. But if he's left out, there's no way that the minister can come and tell exactly what's happening. And our view is that let us know as a department what's happening, because we can not only account when it comes to us distributing monies to the associated institutions. You give money and you don't get anything, but you must account later. The only thing that we're not going to do is to determine how they negotiate. We're not going to do that. They've got their own negotiating team and they're going to... And even the issues for negotiations, the parties can deal with those issues. We're not going to be party to those. But the expectation would be, before they go and negotiate, because there must be a negotiating strategy, and the areas of negotiations, and what are the issues that will be covered, and where are they pitching their offer as the employer. Those are things that they would come to the minister and say, Minister, this year we'll be negotiating on Article 5.6, and that's where we are, and these are the things that we want to cover, and we have funding for it. And the minister won't have a problem with that. But the challenge would be when people come and say, no, we want to pitch this at this level, but we don't have money. We will sign this agreement, but later minister must make sure that there is money. That we are not prepared even to deal with. These are some of the issues to say, let the minister be aware as to what is really happening. How they craft their strategy, how they negotiate, I think we leave that to the employers themselves. But as long as we are aware what are the issues to be covered and what will be the implications for us. I can tell you now, because some of the structures, they are talking about strikes and other things. And for us, where we're sitting, we don't know how to feature, how we can engage, but we'll then expect that the employers, that side, that the first people to tell us, not Labour, to come and tell the minister, because that will then create... This clause will create that platform between us as employers within a local government to say, Minister, there are these issues that are emerging. What's your view? Don't hear from the newspaper like an outsider. And this is what you're exactly saying. It's not that one to be part of the negotiating team and determine issues for negotiations. That's not the case. Thank you.
No, Mr. Conduct, you are really rubbing it in. But we appreciate the necessity for the role you're describing that the minister must have of identity. I don't think that's the problem. The problem is only the language that we must employ to express that, you see.
Okay.
And that, that's the challenge. It was Jackie, and then you were going to speak, Deputy Minister. Jackie?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think clearly I'm picking up, you know, a few issues out of this particular clause. We are mindful of the fact that Labour, you know, raised some issues about the minister, usurping the role of parties to the bargaining council, you know, through this particular clause. And our argument, I think, has been, you know, we've been consistent in our argument that the clause seeks to achieve is just to ensure that the minister is consulted before you know Salga could go into the bargaining council and finalise on any collective agreement there. To address the issues, I think, that were raised earlier on by the deputy minister, the impact of whatever agreement on the wage increases, which might impact on the national fiscal. But again, I think the impact that this has on the physical circumstances of individual municipalities. We've had situations in the past where you would find that a collective was concluded in the bargaining council, you know, to raise the salaries of municipal workers by 13%. Some of the municipalities couldn't afford, you know, to adjust the salaries of them because, you know, that, you know, they just could not afford it within their available, you know, generated revenue and so on. And as the DM, you know, indicated earlier on, that would end up, you know, having an impact on service delivery projects that, you know, the municipality has set itself to achieve. Or I also wanted to indicate, Chairperson, that I'm getting the sense that after Bill A was introduced, I thought that I'm getting an impression today that Salga is set with the current, with the clause as is contained in here now, unless we, I didn't hear that clearly. I'm of the view that Salga is happy with the revised clause as is. Maybe we might, you know, discuss issues that were raised by Labour, but we're saying there was never an intention for the minister to go and sit in the bargaining council at any given minute. This is just a fulfillment of the requirements of Chapter 3 of the Constitution, which says Salga as a state organ is required in terms of that particular, you know, chapter to interact with the other spheres of government, you know, in its operation. And we don't think by doing so really we'll be trying to take over the role and powers of Salga. I think lastly, Chairperson, I just also wanted to indicate that the local government space, you know, as it exists today, has shown us over time that failure to put such clauses in place would take us, you know, some 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 years backward, because this was actually prompted by the experience that we've seen whereby the responsible minister, the executive, you know, which is responsible for local government in the country, is not being consulted on anything around this area, except when Parliament calls and say, you tell us, what is your ministry doing, what's your department doing? And this was actually intended to address that particular, you know, policy gap that was identified.
Firstly, Chairperson, you should give me the names of the people who were taking the approach you say they were, that effectively we want to take over, and I'll ask the minister to fire them, because they had no mandate to speak like that. Secondly, you and I serve a certain vanguard party, which represents the proletariat, and we will get fired by that party if we were to undermine labor rights. So, look, I think we've covered the ground now, and it's for Parliament to decide. I think we've been repetitive. Essentially, it's this, that I think my own view for what it's worth is that, firstly, there is no intention of substituting for collective bargaining. For what it's worth, the minister is a former unionist himself. Secondly, that, you know, we're all concerned about macroeconomic stability and the issues that have been covered by the colleagues from the department. I won't cover the ground. Thirdly, that what the DG offers might be a way out, if Parliament will agree, is they must consult with the minister before, and then we can either say regularly inform the minister of progress, or if people don't like the word regularly, we can say inform the minister before final decision making in a way that is consistent with the Labour Relations Act. The minister has no power to undo the Labour Relations Act, and we apologize, on a more serious note now, we apologize if any signal was communicated to this committee that we want to substitute for collective bargaining. That's not the intention. We now plead with you to consider what we're saying, and there's very little more I think we can offer. I'd like to plead to my colleagues not to repeat points unless something new emerges. Thank you.
Law is meant to change behavior for better or for worse. In other words, it's meant to dissuade us from doing certain things or to encourage us to do certain things. Now, Jackie, what is your experience to date about things that are in the law? How often have they been completely ignored? So, I'm just saying, in putting something in the piece of legislation itself, it's no guarantee that it will happen. Even if you have a recourse that you can then invoke it and say, but you said you would consult and you didn't, what will it produce? What I'm driving at is part of the what this discussion is telling us, that we're going to need much more than what's in here, what is closed here, even if it's agreed, even if it's slightly amended, as the deputy minister is insisting we do. But there's a lot more that is going to be needed to deal with that issue. In other words, it's not just a legal issue, it is also a practice that people are concerned about. So, members, what's your view about that? I want your recommendation on the language here. That clause there. Consult the minister and any other parties that may be described. By the way, who the hell are those? Which other parties are you thinking of who may be prescribed? Who's going to prescribe them? What is that line intended to mean? Did you have an idea there, or just a... Yeah.
Look, Chair, based on experience, the most important party is National Treasury.
Yes.
So I'm saying that for me is one of the most obvious parties that we may want to consider.
Okay, so this is broader than just the minister, is any other than any other. Okay.
It also includes the minister for the DPSA, you know, to align what is happening, you know, on the ground with this.
So this prescription is going to come afterwards. Who else?
I think basically it's you know, the three ministers at national level, but they will also have to, you know, bring in SALGA because it's the employer rep in the bargaining council.
Yeah. Okay. So is there? Okay. Yes, ma'am, and then James. Yeah.
I think. English that interprets to my language, Zulu, I think this consultation for the minister to be consulted, if he is informed, it means that It just tells us SMB we are going to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It doesn't add or subtract and say what, well, you've informed that person.
Yeah.
But if you consult, you give the room for some form of negotiation a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, James?
We could say consult and then stipulate that this does not imply that the minister has a veto. Could we not say something like that? So I'm not unhappy with the minister's language, he suggested. Remember this day, minister. We agree.
Not like blick me.
Consult the minister and any other parties as maybe subscribe. If we leave it like that, what harm will it do? Yes. Let's hear the lawyer and then I'll give the committee.
Sorry, Chairperson, to dwell on that again. The language that's used in most of the legislation as it stands is the word consult.
Yes.
As the Honourable Member said, inform might have a little less implications, but the catchphrase here is the after consultation part. If we had said in consultation, yes, that would mean there would be a problem, because it would mean that the minister would have to make certain recommendations and SELGA would have to agree with the minister.
Yes.
But if you leave it at after consultation, it's the same as basically what happened with NEDLAC was there was consultations that took place, NEDLAC made some recommendations, we accepted some of them we didn't. But we don't have to accept any of that, for that matter.
Yeah.
So the word consult, in our opinion, doesn't really pose any implication for the constitutionality or for the minister being implicated in trying to take over the
yeah.
whole process of bargaining. Consult is just the basic word that we use. It's that in or after which makes
that would complicate
yeah.
things here, and it's not used here anyway.
Jefferson, you ask what would be a problem if we just left it as it is.
Yes.
It's because we're saying that the consultation here is before the negotiations
yeah.
begin. The real crunch is there's no requirement here for them to consult before they make the final decision. Now, the reason we offered inform, we said consult before, but regularly inform during on progress, is because the committee seemed to be reluctant to retain the word consult once the negotiations have begun. So our first prize remains, consult with the minister before and before the bargaining begins, and consult the minister before the final decision is made. As the state law advisor says, any such consultation does not mean that SELGA is forced to consider. It doesn't say in consultation. The effect is after consultation. Because the real point, this doesn't achieve our goal. Our goal is to actually ensure that before they give in to 13%, they hear us. We can also say consistent with the Labor Relations Act to make it very clear that the minister is not above the law. So there are ways, if the committee agrees, that the lawyers can craft it and send it to the chairperson and give us a copy and we can finalize over the next 24 hours. But we are very clear that we cannot have the minister substitute for collective bargaining.
Would it be if we say organized local government must as they embark on any negotiations with parties in the bargaining council consult the minister and any other parties as may be prescribed. I'm not excluding that established for municipalities. You leave it in there. In other words, what you do, you just delete before embarking
yeah.
to read as they embark on any negotiations
yeah.
on salary with the minister. Same clause. Yes.
Chairperson,
the effect of what you're saying covers us.
Yeah.
But the wording might be left to the lawyers about saying, if you say embark, it means begin. So we can just say organize local government, let the lawyers decide. But the sense, I think the chairperson is very helpful. It avoids this before and or, and you know, the clumsiness of what I was offering earlier. I think this is a much more elegant proposal. It should just be organized local government must, in its negotiations with parties, consult. That's all. In other words, it means before and during. But consult very clearly.
Can we, yeah.
Yeah.
In other words, yeah. Can we even say it in a shorter way?
Shorter way, yeah.
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 Can you find language to do that quickly
yeah.
now? On the roof, yes, ma'am?
Chairperson, I agree with the way Deputy Minister has put it. In its negotiations sounds even better.
Yeah.
Because
in its negotiations with
yes.
parties.
Because it would mean any
okay. right. yeah.
in its negotiations, yeah. meaning they would have to, in the beginning and in the end,
in
basically.
In negotiations with parties in the bargaining council,
yeah.
yes.
so
consult the minister. Yeah, that,
yes.
that,
so
that's
any
fine.
Time they take a decision,
yeah.
they come back to the minister to say, this is what we've decided, and so
they
any time.
Okay. In its negotiations, consult the minister. The what it means, all of them will decide
yeah,
when that is.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to say something?
Look, in as much as I may be fighting against thunder, the clause as it stands
yeah.
has a very clear IGR principle.
Yes.
Is that a sphere is going to embark on what is constitutionally mandated to do
yeah.
to negotiate.
Yes.
It will then, before we does that, it doesn't consult with the minister to hear. Mr. Minister, what are the issues that you want to place before I go? All the fiscal stuff and
yeah.
et cetera, as for example, I mentioned. And then democracy takes its course.
Yeah.
There is nothing in the current dispensation that prevents Salga from consulting with the minister as it will be done. The impression that is created, don't you?
Yeah.
Is that as soon as one goes and consults during negotiation, that other negotiation that SALT is involved in would also be aimed at would be aimed at a particular outcome.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the impression is created
yeah.
that there is a particular outcome that is being sought in this forum, and then when SALT goes and step out of that forum to another forum,
yeah.
it must now go and negotiate, taking these two outcomes that this other forum also wants.
Yeah.
Now that is the impression that's created. The wording as it does, from certainly from Salga's perspective, and that has gone through the Salga structures, is an IGR function, which is fine the way that it is. Any other thing would create the impression that there is a process in order to determine a particular outcome. And thank you.
Not me. That's the impression, great. That's what Johan says. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Oh, okay. Johan says the current formulation expresses what Salga agrees with, which is the intergovernmental manner of relating to one another. Now, the way in which we want to amend it, as we are suggesting now, is that we give the impression that there's one forum that's going to determine the outcome that must go into the other one. The other forum. The parties, the minister and the parties, and then the negotiations in the bargaining council. So it's predetermined, in other words. So they don't feel you are trusting them once they have had discussions with you. So when they go out there, they'll go and do what they are free to want to negotiate. This is what they are saying.
I don't know. The negotiation started sometime ago, 2005. I don't understand. So these guys want to go away with murder. Then they must come and do it, clean up. I don't want to do that anymore. some of whom before you said that.
By the way, just a little factor that when this provision in the law that when agreement are reached in the bargaining council, I'm responding to the conversations here quickly. The honourable members want to know what will they be able to achieve on their own anyway? That's the interpretation I have. That is sound. Now, the reason that strikes me, when Jackie was speaking earlier, when I thought the bargaining relations makes provision for certain municipalities to be exempted from certain requirements and so on.
Yeah.
In other words, you say 13% say, we can't afford that. All we can afford is 7 or something, which they can afford. So, so let's talk about that. Yes, then.
Chair, so you see, it's a unique arrangement within local government that you have. It's there and it exists. The municipalities do apply for exemption and they get them, Chair. But still, these things do come back to us. When people do it on the ground to say they never received money, it's another issue. But I think for now, it's an issue that will always protect the municipalities where they don't have money, especially when at a national level. I can tell you when there was 13.5%, 13 or 10.5%, because we're part of the process. Some applied for that, for exemption, because they did not have money. It's a reality. They do not have money, so to pay people. But it's an arrangement that is acceptable. Unions, I think, have agreed with it, so I don't think we have a problem with it currently. The only challenge comes when the trade unions now on the ground do it away and say, no, there's this standing agreement. They want that agreement to be extended and be implemented fully by everybody. But they are aware of the fact that there was an application for such. So that one, I think, for us is not an issue. It's just that we just need to know when there are challenges. That only applies within the local sphere, not when it comes to national and provincial, because there, once you take a decision, it applies across with municipalities. Each and every municipality is an employer in its own right, so they can make a determination and a decision on some of the issues. And I think that's a unique arrangement that we have. But I think for now, it's still working, regardless of the challenges.
Chair, just 2 points quickly. You see why, and I'm not sure now doing what my deputy minister didn't want us to do in terms of repeating things, but I want to make this point differently. You see, one of the reasons why it becomes important to have our minister at minimum informed, if not consulted, is that when there are problems down the line, it is not the employer organization, SALGA, in all instances that must deal with the effects of that. These municipalities come directly to us, and then we get very urgent submissions in terms of trying to assist them with bailouts. And in fact, these are realities, Chair. These are realities. So I feel fairly strongly that to come to my second point, that if we're talking about IGR principles, one of the IGR principles must be one of consultation, if not consultation, at least informing the national ministry of implications that will affect the entire sector and that we need to manage as a national department. SALGA is not managing local government in this country in terms of being the regulatory authority. It is the department and ministry of COCTA that is legally responsible to manage the sector. So their decisions have got implications that we need to pick up and manage down the line. So Chairperson, I'm once again saying that I think for me a compromise could be pursued and maybe should be pursued. Thanks.
So I think I wanted also to highlight the issue of saying it goes the same. I just want to cite an example for when teachers go for strike. And at the end, the political head of that department or ministry will time and again be quoted and to account to the public to know, even ask to Parliament to want some statement from that ministry. But what's happening? What is the strike going to get off? People on the ground are affecting. if she's not consulted, not knowing what's going on in the bargaining chamber, at the end, she's the one as the political head of that department, needs to adjust some salaries again. You said Treasury has taken in on all those negotiations, but when budgeting again to adjust those salaries from teachers who've been in strike, is the minister, those independent institutions on that bargaining negotiating table are not there. That's why you are saying the political head of that department must be consulted so that you know what's happening.
Both of you, Salka is not saying that the minister must not be consulted. You are choosing them of something that they're not saying. I think it's unfair that you even think that they are saying that. They are saying that the manner in which the consultation is described here is adequate. They agree with it. And they are saying that to extend it further than that, you are treading unnecessarily on bargaining council labor relations issues, and you're going to be falling into trouble with the law. And the lawyers agree with them. So that's the issue. So, and this is why the formulation that you want to choose must acknowledge that. Don't want to choose them of saying the minister must not be consulted. They're not saying that. Exactly. The manner in which we want to amend this legislation is displeasing them, that you are now wanting to take more than they have given in on the negotiations, on the consultations. There's no political head here in the discussions. This is the law. I'm talking about law and what the law should say. The law says there is So what do you suggest we do? What are members advising me to do?
Yes, I'll come to you with the end of the procedure.
Jefferson, with due respect to Johan, he says this is creating an impression. So it's not about substance, it's about image and wording. Firstly, I can't see that. Maybe if I speak to him outside the meeting, I'll understand what he means by saying it's creating an image or an impression. If it is creating that impression, then all we have to do is word it in a way that undoes that impression. As far as I know, there's reasonable consensus, unless I'm misreading the things that you yourself chair think. If we're simply saying that the wording should be such that it says that, and insofar as an impression is being created, it's being created even by the choice of the current word, if that's the issue. We're simply saying that in the negotiations, SALGA must consult. That's all, full stop. In a way that's consistent with the Labour Relations Act. That's what the substance of what we're saying is. That, in effect, would mean before they negotiate, they will confer with the minister, he might offer them some ideas, and then before they finalize the decision. Comrade Chair, if I had to put it on crudely for an ANC document, all I would say is the SALGA must consult the minister before they begin the negotiation and before the final decision is made in a way that's consistent with the Labour Relations Act. That's all we're saying. What is the problem there? John's not listening, but maybe we can engage outside. What is the problem there? That's all it is. The wording can be done between the lawyers, the chairperson, and SALGA, and one of us. That's all it is, really. It was you, chairperson, you gave us the way out. Actually, you provided the most novel way forward. You said, leave out before. And
No, I haven't forgotten. No.
You said,
no.
All that happened between you and me was,
no,
all of one word.
No, I'm arguing that you are being disingenuous because you are implying that they are not listening, that they have no right to object to
the
proposal.
No, I'm talking about now he's not listening.
No.
He's busy talking with Johan. That's what I mean.
No,
I wasn't implying. That's just coming.
No, all I'm saying,
now you're talking to Johan.
What I'm trying to do is to be aware that what you want to do was objected to in the committee meetings, not only by then, SALGA, but by the trade unions themselves. They questioned. In fact, the reason why they took this thing to the bargaining council was that they want to enter the bargaining councils. This piece of thing, and this is why I like your, what is it called, your, remember where it comes from, the framework. And it's this, what was here was a compromise. That's actually, this best expresses the intergovernmental relations attitude that says you must consult us before you do that. And that's what that piece, which they are agreeing with. So the proposal that we are making, I'm trying to say, how do we bridge the gap between the two? And they feel that if we put it that way, even as innocent as it appears, like you were saying yourself, the reason why you're objecting to this current population you think is not adequate, okay? They're saying the same thing. It's not substance. It's adequacy of the language we're expressing to formulate what will best suit both your interests. That the way it's formulated doesn't give the impression that negotiations are going to take place in the bargaining councils, but they're already predetermined in the consultations. So that's the objection that they have, that you can't predetermine in the way you formulate it that they will be predetermined elsewhere. And then, in fact, they're not negotiations anymore. So this is the concern I'm bringing to your attention as lawmakers, that when you do that, you are creating a basis for conflict around the legislation. So you must expect that it will arise for that reason. We can proceed with what you think is the best compromise, do it, and ignore the concerns that have been raised, because that's what it will be. Salga, they want you to, members want you to restate your position. What formulation will please?
Suppose I understand. It's fine.
As it is, there, in the clause, there. Page 5. Bargaining Council Agreement, 7-1-1. Is that page 5? Yes, Honorable Nelson.
A question to Salga Chairperson. Does that therefore imply that no further negotiations, that you will just, the negotiations will take place before? With the department before, and no further negotiations after that. Is that by implication?
Yes.
The notion of consultation, as in the law, that is an accepted IGR principle as a colleague has indicated. So there will be consultation at the staff stands prior to the negotiation in the bargaining chamber. The question of then what happens? Then the employer engages with the employee bodies in the negotiation after it has listened to the minister as the regulator of overall local government. That is the situation as Salga sees the collective bargaining unfold.
And then during?
And curing the process?
There is nothing within the current framework, within the current way of doing things where that is excluded. In fact, it has happened already, as my colleague has indicated during the last round of consultation. So that is not excluded as a matter of practice, but to put it as a matter of law, that whilst you are negotiating there in the bargaining chamber, you must also consult here. That creates the impression that there are not two fronts, that Salga must not bluff push with it. As an employer body of the
okay.
But
Chairman,
my understanding was saying at the beginning of the negotiations of the bargaining council, and towards the end, but not during the process. But he's saying the impression, the way is in this clause saying, even during the process, that creates the impression of they are doing parallel negotiations at the same time.
Yes, ma'am. And then, Kontwana.
Chair, could I ask about something? I think Salga's problem, I understand what Johan is saying in its negotiations. It seemed to suggest that, in a way, the minister does form part of the actual negotiations. So, I want to propose something, Johan. The minister must know in the beginning what you want to do, and then the minister must know in the end what was decided. I think that was what we wanted to achieve. So if we changed it to say that organized local government must, before embarking on any negotiations with parties in the bargaining council, establish four municipalities, consult the minister and any other parties that may be prescribed, and must, after an outcome has been reached, inform the minister of such outcome. Would that then address Johan's problem also, so that the minister doesn't form part of the negotiations, but is aware of the outcome of such negotiations?
The department won't like it. That's not what they want. They want them to consult before. They want to be told before the finality is reached. Kontwana, sorry?
In order to have an input into what the outcome is going to be, because that's what it comes down to. To in order to have an input into what is finally decided.
That's what the department
that is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
What then happens about the negotiation?
Yeah. Huh?
Yes,
that's it.
I think we will come back.
Chairperson, we are dealing with mandating arrangements, yeah. That's what we're dealing with. We're not dealing with negotiations. That's for that reason. See, the minister is a member, is an ex-official member of the NEC of Falcon. Like any other member who can sit and request information. But see, what we're raising, Chair, as a negotiator, you go, there is a give and take, and negotiators themselves. I've been a negotiator within Falcon, 2005 I was there. So that's why I'm trying to clarify this. That from our side, when the decision is made, I will give you just the last round where we negotiated, we were there, because we were requested by parties to go there and be there until 3 o'clock in the morning. You find that the decision is taken, but at least we're able to give direction to the minister and give an update. This time around, we're saying we don't want to be part of the process, we don't want to be part of the team. But when decisions are taken, so it's important that the minister is aware of what's happening. He may not influence the final decision, but he can air his views, and he's not going to be called by the negotiators. That's not going to happen. But the member of the NEC of SALCA that is responsible for human resources, he's the one who can just talk to the minister and say, look, hey, this is where we are, this is what is happening, we can talk. This is what we're talking about, but it's how we deal with negotiations. It's not normally formal. But it's just an arrangement where people pick up a phone and say, Minister, this is what is happening. At this point in time, the minister is not informed, Chair. It's only us who will get sacrificed at night to go and sit and try and make things happen. And we're saying we cannot be abused when those things happen. At least let there be a formality and just a proper arrangement like any other sphere of government. I know when we talk about single public service, I don't want to call the chair to go. It's an area that we dealt with when I was doing a study in 2001. But these are some of those issues that assist these spheres to understand where we're coming from. How do we work together? And I think then in actual is what we're trying to say. Thank you.
Okay.
Members, it's 25 past 1. Okay. And we've got about what? Three issues to deal with. What do you suggest we do? We proceed and we suspend discussions and take them up at the next meeting. Is that okay? Are you okay? No, the committee must meet. The committee must approve any change here. We can meet, we will meet, but the committee must still meet. Yes. Yeah. So you agree that we suspend discussion of this stuff. We'll come, take it up when we come back here. And hopefully they will have negotiated between themselves a proper formulation that they will be pleased with and so on. And then present it to us. They must do that on our behalf. Deputy Minister, I'm saying you must lead the negotiation so that on our behalf you bring a formulation that we then we will decide whether we agree with it or not in the meantime. Members, I'm doing so that I'm not accused of railroading through your lunch, but also because I think we must give fair consideration to each of the issues that we've identified here. Because if we try to rush through it, we won't do justice. And this is an important piece of legislation. I don't think we should make any assumptions about how fast and how quick we can do that. Okay, thank you very much. The meeting's adjourned until next week, and we'll take this up.
Yeah. Ya, nada más, no tiene nada más, no vale nada.